Do you want to know how the next generation of hustlers are turning their dreams into dollar signs? I'm Matt James, and this is Riser Diaries from TurboTax Studios, where we get real about money moves being made by today's boldest game changers breaking barriers and redefining what success really means. We're talking about the rise, the grind, and all the ups and the downs on the path to making it big. Hello, Riser Nation. Today, we're diving into the journey of a dreamer who traded the hills of New Zealand for the city that never sleeps, Isaac Hendon Miller. Isaac initially interviewed strangers as a way to meet people. Fast forward to today, and he's now interviewing both local legends as well as global celebrities. Whether he's in the DJ booth at major events, expanding his product line, or getting hundreds of thousands of likes on his videos, Isaac is undeniably rising to the top. Welcome to Riser Diaries, Isaac. How are we doing?
I'm good. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. You are the definition of a Renaissance man. I mean, there's so much that you do, all the way hailing from New Zealand. Can you tell us a little bit about the inspiration that fueled your passion for music, fashion, metropolitan life?
Yeah, damn. So I guess, I grew up in New Zealand, which is a very small country at the bottom of the South Pacific Ocean. We're close to Australia and Antarctica. Mm-hmm. But it was a real cultural hub. Like, we didn't have a lot of globalization, you know, when I was growing up in the 80s and 90s. And so most of the things that were popular in New Zealand were coming out of New Zealand. So there was, you know, cool bands coming out, cool fashion coming out of the country. I was a skateboarder, so I hit the streets like really, really early on. And I was just like soaking up everything that I saw, you know, like graffiti, breakdancing, you know, like hip hop on the streets, you know, and we had these like amazing boutiques where I'd go in and like, I had no money, but I'd just like go through and like just window shopping all day, every weekend, you know? And I was just very excited by what I was seeing, older kids doing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I always had this thing inside me that was like, I want something bigger than this. I want something bigger. And so like, you know, first of all, I set my sights to like a bigger city in New Zealand and then abroad.
You mentioned having no money. What was your financial situation like in New Zealand?
So I grew up in a family that I would say was like comfortable, but my parents were very frugal. Mm-hmm. And there was not a lot of money for, you know, like big purchases or anything like that. So like it was the off-brand Nikes, you know, or Adidas, you know. Yeah. It was always like not the sneaker I wanted, like the sneaker that I got. Yep. Which, you know, when you're like 10 years old, 12 years old is the worst.
Yeah.
But you know, like I was, I was never like food insecure or anything like that. But yeah, I grew up in a, what I would call like a very frugal household with parents who combined didn't make a lot of money, but like made ends meet.
Yeah. So when you were envisioning this future in fashion and music, was it something that you were looking to get rich about, or was it something where you're just like, I want to see what's out there for me?
When you come from a family that doesn't have a lot, but you know, on TV and stuff, you see people who have a lot, you know, you always want more. I always wanted more.
Right.
I definitely didn't grow up poor, but like I grew up in a family where my mom always thought the trappings of wealth was ultra corny. So that was how I was raised.
Wow.
So it wasn't necessarily that I wanted like possessions, but I always wanted like bigger and bigger experiences. And especially like I was very attracted to life behind the velvet rope. Mm-hmm. You know, so like I wanted VIP experiences. I wanted to know the doorman. I wanted to like get in places that I wasn't necessarily invited.
Yep. And I guess one of the ways to creating wealth for yourself is being entrepreneurial. And you started two t-shirt lines when you were in college. What sparked this creative venture?
First of all, I started working in hairdressing salons when I was about 15 years old.
Okay.
And so at the hairdressing salons, they had fashion magazines. And so I would start like reading these international fashion magazines and just be like, oh my God, there's like so much out there that I, you know, when I was growing up, okay, my only exposure to Prada and Louis Vuitton were that they were the logos on the sails of the America's Cup boat. So I literally thought Louis Vuitton and Prada were boat companies. No joke. That is not a joke. That's fully serious, okay?
Wow.
So, you know, like I grew up in New Zealand. Like right, I was right. There was no exposure to stuff except for, you know, sports.
Yeah.
And so I started like reading these fashion magazines and being like, oh, these are fashion companies? Like right. I thought these were boat companies.
Yep.
And so from reading all these fashion magazines when I was working in the hairdressing salons, I was like, damn, there's like this whole other world out there. You know, I didn't really know about fashion designers or anything like that, you know, or runway shows. And I moved to Auckland from Christchurch, and Auckland was the biggest city. And there were these, you know, like boutique designers and stuff. And I was like, damn, there's all this stuff out there. Like, I want to be a part of this.
Yes.
But I didn't know how to be a part of it. So I was like, maybe I can start my own. And so, yeah, I started these clothing brands, screen printing t-shirts in my garage with Love a group it. Of my friends. And yeah, like we definitely didn't make much money, but it was an incredible experience.
So when did you make this transition from this entrepreneurial fashion venture into the blogosphere, when you started Isaac Likes in 2008, and that was kind of the peak of blogging?
So New Zealand has its own Fashion Week, New Zealand Fashion Week. Shout out New Zealand Fashion Week.
Okay.
And I started volunteering at New Zealand Fashion Week first as a driver for the VIPs. I'd bring editors over from New York City and London and stuff like that. Right. And I was driving them from show to show and just asking them like a billion questions. You know, I was like always a very curious, you know, a curious young dude. And I would stand in the back of the fashion shows and watch everything that was happening. And I'd see people who were sitting in the front row, yeah. right? And on one side, it's the buyers from retail stores.
Yep.
And on the other side, it's the journalists.
Mm.
And I was like, I don't think I want to be stuck in a retail environment for the rest of my life,
right.
but I always like to write. And when I was at university, writing always came naturally to me. So I was like, okay, that's what I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. I want to do that. And so I started this blog because also at the time, nobody in New Zealand was giving any form of like fashion critique. Everything was like repurposed press releases, published, and it just kind of seemed fake and fluffy.
Mm.
And I was like, no, there's more to this industry than that. So yeah. I'm going to like come and find the truth.
Yep.
And what I discovered was that everybody loves the truth, except for when it's being written about them.
Interesting.
So I learned real quick in New Zealand that like, you know, you're writing like honest reviews of people's fashion shows and people are going to get angry with you real, real quick. And so I'm glad that I had New Zealand as a training ground. It was a small, you know, it was a small arena. And once I left, I was like, okay, there are things that I've learned here that I don't want to do.
Mm.
But yeah, that's how the blog got started.
So 2011, you moved to New York. Tell me about the shock in terms of difference in culture in New Zealand to New York, and financially. I mean, they're completely two different economies.
Yeah. I saved $10,000 to move to America. And I did that, but with this writing contract where, you know, when you're on an e-commerce website, a clothing website, and it will be like, blue shirt will look good with these tan pants and, you know, like made of 100% cotton, and it will say like a little description about. I wrote something like 5,000 of those clothing descriptions for a website, for a .com, for an American.com website, and was working 7 days a week, 10 hours a day, 70 hours a week, and so it was paid $10,000 for the contract, moved to New York with the money from that contract. And that's how I did it.
So off the hustle,
yeah.
is how you got here.
Oh, dude, blogging was making me no money whatsoever. Wow. Yeah, I was getting paid like, because I was writing freelance for some publications, for a few newspapers, New Zealand newspapers and stuff like that. And they would pay me maybe like $250 a week. Like I was making no money, but every dollar I made, I paid rent, I bought food, and I bought another flight to go to Paris or to go, you know, to go wherever to travel.
So what was that big writing break like for you when you moved to New York City?
So I had interviewed a bunch of American editors while I was at Paris Fashion Week in 2010 or 2011.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them was Bruce Pask, who at the time was the fashion editor of the New York Times and now is the fashion director for Bergdorf Goodman.
Yep.
He is a king.
Legend.
I love that man.
Mm-hmm.
And he got me a column writing for the New York Times the day after I arrived in New York. So that was literally like a dream come true. And so things happened for me in pretty quick succession. I started writing for GQ. I got a couple of these, you know, these amazing gigs straight away. But I will say that I had written every single day for 3 years up until that point. So I'd kind of like honed my craft at that point. And I'd put the yards in, you know, like I'd travel to Milan Fashion Week, New York Fashion Week, Paris Fashion Week off my own dime, staying at like 20 euro a night hostels. You know, like I was like really hustling and just putting all of the money back into the career.
Wow. I think that anybody who's listening right now, who's aspiring for anything, can take away two big things. First off, the importance of the connections that you made earlier on in career and the hustle that goes into it. Nothing sounds like happened overnight. 3 years of writing continuously And then 2013 comes along and you've got the perfect job. You've hit your stride in New York City and you leave it all. Can you tell us about what you left for and why you left?
Okay, so they were my dream jobs, right? So writing for the New York Times was my absolute dream. And, you know, I was picking up other things here and there, but like I was making no money. But the blog had quite a, you know, like a fairly large audience at that point. And this was before the days of like Instagram collaborations or anything like that, you know? Right. And I got a phone call that this big shoe company was willing to pay me $1,500 to write a blog post where I took photographs of myself wearing the shoes.
Amazing.
And I was like, what? Like what? $1,500? Like nobody, I'd never made any money like that in my entire life. Like at that point, well, yeah, I made the $10,000 for that writing contract, but that was like insane amount of work.
Right.
So this was like something that was going to take me an afternoon to do, $1,500. And I was like, damn. And around that time, I'd started DJing as well, because I was also, one thing we didn't say was that I moved to New York City and I started living in nightclubs. Mm-hmm. You know, like my entire life was spent like at home and then out in the meatpacking district.
Yep.
And I was like, damn, I've arrived. Like this is, you know, this is where I want to be. And because I was like spending so much time in these nightclubs, a bunch of the club owners were like, yo, you're like around so much, you should become a promoter. And I knew that was a dirty word. I knew I didn't want to be doing that.
Yep.
And I was like, okay, I don't want to be a promoter, but what if I DJ? And so I went to Scratch Academy, the DJing school.
Wow.
And did a DJ course and like learn how to mix.
Mm-hmm.
And I started DJing. My first ever gig was at, Up and Down? Which was like also
New
crazy.
York legendary staple.
For sure. So, and they paid me $750 to DJ. And I was like, what? Like, I'm like, you know, writing a story could take a week, right?
Right.
And I'm getting paid $50, $100.
Yep.
I can do something for an evening and have fun and get paid $700 or, you know, like do a blog post and get paid $1,500. Of course, like this stuff came in like, it trickled in. It wasn't like it was like, okay, now all of a sudden I'm making $1,500 constantly, but I saw that there were bigger opportunities.
Yep.
And I was like, okay, I need to pursue these things.
You've made this transition into working for yourself. The money's starting to come in a little quicker than it was before. Why did you decide to bet on yourself?
Okay, so I did have a couple of writing contracts, writing these clothing descriptions for some of these big clothing companies in America. So that was how I subsidized my journalist income.
Love it.
But I also had this feeling like, damn, did I really become a writer to write like minimal creams and sheer silks like on, you know, on these .com websites?
Right.
Like I was like, this is never what I signed. This isn't what I signed up for, even though to do that was how I paid my rent. Right. Mm-hmm. So I just got to a point where I was like, this isn't really what I want. Although I enjoy the camaraderie of being in an office with people, you know, like I'm a free spirited dude. Like I want to work for myself. I want to be out there like chasing my dreams.
Yep.
And you know, and I also had this feeling like if you're going to move to New York City, like you move to New York City to like really give it your best shot.
100%.
And the reason I wanted to live here was because you're competing against the best people in the world at whatever industry you're in.
Fact.
And so I felt like I wasn't going to get that actual competition if I was inside an office. So I decided to go out on my own and really try and build something with my social platforms and, you know, and see what would happen.
So you're getting these brand deals, you're doing DJ gigs, your blog's starting to gain a lot of momentum. You've got multiple streams of revenue coming in. How are you managing that newfound income and how are you going about filing your taxes now that you have all these different lines of income coming in?
Yeah, I mean, that was definitely a wake up call. Okay, so the advantages of having an employer are that you often get taxed back at the end of the year.
Right.
Okay, so that's great.
We love that.
We do love that. The disadvantage of working for yourself is that you have to pay tax at the at the end of the year. But the advantage of working for yourself is that you can get to claim a lot of things as expenses.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's like both have their pros and cons, right? You know, I was like learning about 1099s and all these sorts of stuff. But like I never really became a financial expert. But I will say that like with all the brand deals coming in, my New York City experience got a lot better when it went from like earning $25,000 a year the first year to like $50,000 the next year. And then finally, like in my 30s, when I started to earn six figures, I was like, oh, wow, like life really does get better.
Yeah, for sure. TurboTax experts make your moves count. Filing with 100% accuracy and getting your max refund guaranteed. See guarantee details at TurboTax.com/guarantees. experts only available with TurboTax Live.
One of the big things that stuck out to me was when these deals started coming in and you're navigating the income and you've got a blog, but so many people had blogs and it's hard to differentiate yourself in the marketplace. So one of the things that you started doing was you transitioned into a lot of short form video content. So how did you decide to transfer from pure blogging into that short video content?
I transitioned to every new media platform that came along, right? So at the beginning, my first blog was on Blogspot.
Blogspot.com. Come on now.
Exactly. Yeah. Shout out. Then I went to WordPress and then I did Tumblr. And then Instagram, of course. Mm-hmm. And so Instagram and DJing were my two main sources of income, but Instagram was probably a little higher between 2016 and 2020, right? And then, as we know, the pandemic hit.
Yep.
And my Instagram income died immediately.
Yeah.
And my DJing income 100% died. There was no money to be made.
Yep.
And so I had to go on unemployment for the first time in my life. And I'm sitting at home and I'm like, damn, like, what am I going to do with myself? Mm-hmm. And I remembered back to the early days of blogging where I set myself this goal of posting 3 blog posts a day every single day. So my first year of blogging, I posted 1,000 blog posts.
That's insane.
Like, I was really like Energizer Bunny, you know, level. Like, I was just relentless.
Yeah.
And I decided that, like we're all sitting at home. I've got to do something. I'm going to post 3 TikTok videos a day every day. And I did that.
Yeah.
You know, and it was a much different world on TikTok back in those days because TikTok itself was setting the trends.
Mm-hmm.
And they 100%. Were like, okay, these are the trending hashtags this week.
Mm-hmm.
This week it's like DIY spring cleaning or like whipped coffee or whatever, you know, like they had all these, like they had all these themes of the week or recreating an album cover, you know, with a joke. Facts. And I was like, okay, so every day I'm going to try and make 1 or 2 videos that go in line with whatever the trend is of the week.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to try and make a personal video.
Love it.
And I did that. And I was really lucky that it started to pick up momentum. But like my experience with anything that I've done is like anything that I've put my mind to and just like relentlessly pursued will start to work for me at a certain point, but it has never happened immediately. Nothing's ever happened. It took me, I think, over like 4 months, I think, of posting videos every single day before my first video hit over 10,000 views.
Wow.
Yeah.
What was that video?
It was an unboxing video. So I was doing, back in the day, I used to do a lot of unboxing videos and I'd do these real crazy, like I was inspired by Casey Neistat,
who
like throws everything around, does everything violent. So I'd do that. And I drop kicked a box onto my couch. And it was me drop kicking the box onto my couch and I got 35,000 views. And I was just like, you know, and those days I still had notifications on.
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa.
Going crazy.
Like, I called my mom. And I was like, yo, I'm famous. It's all happening. Yeah. And then I was like, okay. And so the other thing that I learned and that TikTok taught me is that on TikTok, you get very quick user feedback, right? Mm-hmm. And obviously I have this accent and there was a big like houseplant thing on TikTok that happened because, you know, we're in our apartments, you know.
Of course.
And I said the word plant in a video and people were like, what, plant? Like what?
Yeah.
Say plant again. And so for the next like 50 videos, I made sure that I said the word plant like 10 times per video and I get all these comments. And so I just like leaned into whatever people reacted to, I would lean into.
That is genius. You're figuring things out that people search and scour the internet for years trying to figure out. And it's just through repetitions and paying attention that you pick up on the things that you did and you capitalize on it. What financial advice would you give younger Isaac?
Okay. So my one financial regret is that when I was always good at saving when I was young, because, you know, I came from this really frugal background. So like I was never spending money on anything. So by the age of 19, I'd managed to save $3,000. I had $3,000 in the bank and that was just from working, you know, odd jobs.
Yeah.
My one thing would be like invest money in the stock market earlier.
Mm-hmm.
I do wish that I had known that, you know, there's this crazy thing that if you save like $200 a month from 18 to 30 and you put it in a like term deposit savings account, just with the compound interest you know, like by the time you're 50, that ends up being like $1 million or something.
Right, right.
I wish I'd known things like that when I was younger and I didn't. I do wish that I'd known some things like that. But honestly, like I've never been that stupid with money. I've never gotten myself into debt. Mm-hmm. I've always been pretty cautious. And like the only time that I've spent money is when it's been for like a work experience thing that hopefully is going to pay dividends further on.
How has your bookkeeping and financial prowess evolved as you've matured and made money?
Okay, so I do all of my purchases on one credit card. Okay, so everything goes through one account.
Yep.
Okay, so like we know where the money is, you know, has gone. Okay, so that's the most. I think that's the most important thing that I do. It also gets me really good miles. So shout out.
Yes.
And I pay it off in full 100% every month. So I have never once paid interest on a credit card. I have to say, really important. And that's one thing that my parents did teach me. Like they were like, if you are you going to use a credit card, pay it off in full every month. Mm-hmm. So I do that. I have money that goes into long-term, very, very, what's the word? Like conservative yield savings accounts. And that's the main way that I deal with that.
Whatever moves you made last year, TurboTax will make them count. File with a TurboTax expert for 100% accurate taxes and a maximum refund guaranteed. See guarantee details at TurboTax.com/guarantees. Experts only available with TurboTax Live. And if you haven't already, hit that subscribe button and stay tuned for more. Who do you go to for sound financial advice?
My parents, I think because they've been so frugal and you know, with like very little money, were able to pay off their mortgage in full as well. So my dad has always said like property is the best investment. So I went in with my dad and mum and bought a property in New Zealand that's like a bit of land on the seaside with a beautiful view.
Nice.
And they're like, no matter what, it will always go up in value.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I do have some friends who are really into crypto and stuff like that. But generally speaking, by the time I'm asking them advice, it's because everybody else is already talking about it.
Right,
so
right.
Yeah, my advice to myself is usually just like work as hard as possible and try to make as much money and then try not to spend more than I'm making.
More like that. What financial advice do you have for aspiring writers and video creators?
I always did these things as a like secondary job. Like I always was making money through other means while doing that. So like I started my blog writing 3 articles a day while I had a full-time job working at a magazine. So like I wasn't, you know, like I wasn't like I was just like, okay, I'm gonna try and make money doing this stuff. Like I was making money in another way. I was doing this kind of as a hobby that I hoped would one day turn into a job. Like everything that I've ever started, even DJing, like, yes, I got paid for the first gig that I ever did, but then I can't even tell you how many times I've DJed for free in my career, right? Like, I don't quit the other things that I'm making money from until I am seriously making money in a new endeavor.
Yep.
That's the most important thing. It's like, don't quit your day job until you're really making enough money to replace the income from the day job.
Right.
And the other thing is that like, if you're a video creator, one thing I've found is that the idea is more important than having the $20,000 camera set up, you know, like you can shoot something on your phone that's going to make you more money than the, like the wild HD thing. And so like the idea is the most important thing.
Mm. That is a bar. I agree with that. All right. Now looking into the future, what are your biggest financial goals?
I would really love to own an apartment in New York City. That's definitely a big goal of mine. The one thing that holds me back is the monthly charges.
That's crazy.
That's insane. Like you have a doorman, you have an elevator, and all of a sudden you're paying $2,500 a month just to live in your own apartment. And that's not including rates. That's not including mortgage. But yeah, that's definitely a big goal of mine is to own an apartment. And then I heard a podcast one time with that dude, John Buscemi, who's a serial entrepreneur. And he was like, I haven't turned right on a plane in a long time. So he gets onto the plane. He goes straight to business class.
Mm.
I would love to be traveling business class every time I fly.
Mm.
I paid a very, very low level of rent for years in order to be able to like build up the money to like chase these dreams that I've had.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until I was extremely, extremely secure in my income that I was able to move into a building that even had an elevator.
Mm.
So I've really like, I have tried to be cautious with my finances. That said, one of the best pieces of financial advice that I have been given is a friend of mine said to me, like at a certain point where I lived after 10 years was starting to drive me crazy because it was really like, it was hardcore over there.
Yeah.
And you know, it was affecting my like my nerves, you know?
Yeah.
And they said, if you pay more rent and move into a nicer building that's quiet, allows you to sleep, I guarantee you'll end up earning more money. Mm. And I did, I took that financial risk and I did earn more money as a result. So sometimes you do have to have that abundance mindset. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like coming from the frugal family that I definitely did have that scarcity mindset growing up. Like, oh, what if this all goes away? You know, like, what am I going to do if all the income runs out? But I try not to think like that these days.
Well, you're well on your way, and we are going to manifest that apartment purchase for you in New York City. Isaac, you're a true Renaissance man, and we appreciate you coming on the pod today.
Thank you. And of course, I have to say, I like you.
I like you too. Dang, Isaac is a beast. From starting his blogging career in New Zealand to being a renowned DJ in New York City, Isaac has hustled his way to international success and seems to be doing a much better job tracking his finances. He's the perfect example of how hard work truly pays off if you have the drive to make it happen for yourself. Thank you so much for joining us this week. And as always, I hope you guys are on the rise. Riser Diaries is an Intuit TurboTax podcast presented by TurboTax Studios and produced by Frequency Media. I'm your host, Matt James. Our executive producer is Michelle Corey. Our producer is Lizzie Stewart. Our associate producer is Sara Naz, Jad Babayi. Concept Strategy and Development by Michelle Corey and Jessica Olivier. Our engineer, editor, and mixer is Claire Bidigary Curtis. Video editing by Julian Andrew Kay.